too.
But you think you know everything. You know everything.
Good morning. We are going to bring the August 16th, 2023 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District together. We always start off with our Pledge of Allegiance. Director Slauson, would you like to lead us this morning in our pledge?
Yes, Reverend, please stand, face the flag, and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This time I'd like to ask the Board Secretary if she could read the suggestions for virtual participation and then call the roll of the board, please.
Yes, of course, President Pauley. The EMWD guidelines for virtual participation in EMWD board meetings are as follows. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute your device during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking.
Thank you. And do a roll call.
And I will do the roll call next. Yes. President Pauley.
Present.
Director Corona.
Here.
Director Slauson.
Here.
Director Armstrong.
Here.
Director Record.
Here.
And we have legal counsel in the room.
Very good. Thank you so much for that. April, do we have anybody who's indicated they'd like to do a public speaking opportunity on anything not on the agenda this morning?
No, we do not.
Okay. We'll move on to item two, which is our recognitions this morning. And today we're recognizing the Youth Ecology Corps that Eastern has a longtime partnership with. And Mr. Freitag, would you like to come forth and lead us in the presentation this morning?
Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. It is a pleasure to acknowledge the completion of our 28th Youth Ecology Corps intern program. 2023 marks the 10th year anniversary for the Youth Ecology Corps intern program. We've had 231 young adults come through the program so far. The program was created to give real work experience to young adults entering the workforce and to teach them about the water industry careers. EMWD has been proud to be a leader in the workforce development, and this program has become one of our largest success stories. Today, we're recognizing six Youth Ecology Corps interns for the work they've done over the past 3 months. So this program is sponsored by the Riverside County Workforce Development Board and California Family Life Center. I have a few people here that I'd like to introduce. From California Family Life Center, we have Greg Snow, program coordinator. Also have Zach Bell, development coordinator, Amy Presley, career navigator, and we also have Jamil Donna from the Workforce Development Board. Jamil, would you like to say a couple words?
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you. Sir, the microphone is yours.
You might regret that, Mr. Chairman, because those of you that know me well know that if you hand me a mic, it's amazing, right? 10 years. You have made such a big difference in the lives of, 231 youth. This project is extraordinary. I've told you this before, that other workforce boards have started to do stuff like this. Some of them are fledgling programs that are starting, but yours is a model. And I also sit on the governor's workforce board, so I talk about this in Sacramento. Can't tell you enough. And I also want to thank Mary Jo Ramirez. She's not here today because she was at a youth conference, so you got stuck with me. But I just want to tell you again that the opportunity that you're giving these young folks, because in today's really competitive environment for jobs and all the obstacles they have to overcome, they got a big head start. And some of them have been really, really successful, and as I know, they will be. So thank you for that. But since I have the mic, I would like to, Mr. Chairman and board members and Joe Mawad and staff, also take this opportunity to thank you, not only because you're working with March Air Reserve Base passionately because it's part of your professional work, but you always, EMWD always steps up and goes the extra mile. You supported our air show in April, which turned out to be the largest air show in the nation. We had 450,000 people over the weekend. That's never happened at any Air Force base in the nation. So thank you for that. And then 10 days ago, several of you attended, and also you supported the Our Character Excellence Youth Award Ceremony, which gives $2,500 scholarships to 10 youth. And then in September, as you know, I take most of them to Washington, D.C. with me. So I can't thank you enough. Let's continue this as 10 more years. And I should mention, and I just told Joe that the first week of September, my wife Johnny and I are going to be in Monterey, and so we're planning to have dinner with Jolene and Paul in Monterey. So thank you again. Can I answer any questions?
No. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
When's your new plane going to be ready?
Sorry?
When's your new plane going to be ready?
If you saw the article in the paper today, that's an extraordinary feat, because that plane is actively flying and was refueling. So that's something I worked on for 2 years, because that airplane was one of the 12 that used to fly here at March. It came here as a brand new KC-10 in 1984. Then in 1994, when we became a reserve base, they sent all of our KC-10s to Travis. And I've been trying for 2 years to get one of those back at the museum, and it finally came, and you saw the article in the newspaper yesterday. They could have actually sold that. Well, maybe I shouldn't say this in public, but what the heck, I'm a volunteer. The government could have sold that for $25 million to another nation for air refueling, but we were able to get it. And our goal at the museum is to get every airplane that has ever flown at March. And there's only two left to get, and I'm furiously working on those. But that was our number 107. So come by and see it. It's the largest airplane we have. Now if you drive on the freeway, you'll see the huge tail. It's taller than any of the other airplanes. Thank you for mentioning that, okay. Director Corona. God bless all of you. Thank you for doing great work.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jamil Dada. So now we're going to do some photos and give out our certificates. President Pauly and General Manager Joe Mawad, if you could just step right up, and we'll call in our interns. First up is Diana Dove. Diana? As a records management assistant in the records management department. This is her third cohort, which gives her 1 year of work experience here at EMWD.
Congratulations. All right.
Next up, we have George Pachaco. George, come on up. I'm sure I missed your name. Sorry. So this is George, and he's been working in real property as a real property assistant. This is George's third cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program, giving him 1 year of work experience also. Congratulations, George. Antoinette Dubois. This is Antoinette's, Antoinette's been working in our energy program as an energy program assistant in our contracts department. This is her second cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program, and she's been asked to come back for a third. Congratulations. Mary Johnson. So Mary Johnson has been working as an engineering services assistant in the engineering services department. This is Mary's second cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program, and she's also been asked to do a third cohort starting in August. Alexa Acosta. Alexa Lexar has been working in as a recycled water assistant in a recycled water operations department. This is his second cohort here in the Youth Ecology Corps intern program. Congratulations. All right. And last but not least, Satalia Sanchez. Satalia has been working, as a matter of fact, in two departments while she's been here with us, Water Resources and Facilities Assistant and Engineering Assistant. This is her second cohort in the Youth Ecology Corps program. She's also been asked to come back and do a third cohort starting on Monday. Congratulations. All right. Yeah. Perfect. Thank you. So in closing, I'd like to thank all of the EMWD supervisors that participate in this program. Without them, we wouldn't be able to do this program. EMWD General Manager Joe Mawad, and of course the entire board for your continued support of the Youth Ecology Corps program. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for everyone participating. I think it is, I am a huge supporter of this program and want to we get so much out of it, and I think provide so much for the community. But having these, exposing a lot of our youth to what we do here, and making them part of this organization is something I want to continually always improve and support. So, thank you again for coming, and thank you for everyone for participating. With that, we will move on to item 3 of our agenda this morning, which is a public hearing. This is the time and place for the duly noted public hearing regarding a proposed amendment of the rate and method of apportionment of the special tax, the CFD boundaries, and a proposed increase in the maximum amount of bonded indebtedness within the Community Facilities District number 218-80 Willow Springs of the Eastern Municipal Water District. I declare the public hearing open. I'd like a staff report at this time. Morning, Thomas.
Morning, President Pauley, members of the board. EMWD received a signed petition by Cal Hearthstone Law Option Pool 02 LP LLC requesting that the board consider amending CFD number 2018-80. Cal Hearthstone is the landowner currently owning a majority of the property subject to the special tax within this CFD. On June 21st, 2023, the board adopted resolution number 2023-086 declaring its intention to consider these amendments and set today's public hearing. The requested changes include amending the rate and method of apportionment of the special tax, increasing the amount of the authorized bonded indebtedness amount from $11.2 million to $17.65 million, amending the boundaries for the CFD, and changing the name of the CFD from Adobe Springs to Willow Springs. The proposed changes result from changes in the project design and updating costs of construction and home prices from 2018. The project remains in compliance with EMWD's comprehensive debt policy with the proposed amendments. The CFD is located in the city of Murrieta, north of Via Mira Mosa, and west of Winchester Road. The board has received for review a Community Facilities District report for the CFD prepared by Webb Municipal Finance, LLC, which is hereby entered into the record of this public hearing.
All right. Do we have any questions at this time on this item? Seeing none, I'd like to ask the Secretary of the Board how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on August 8, 2023 in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the CFD boundary in accordance with the Mellow Rouge Community Facilities Act of 1982.
Thank you. If the Secretary of the Board has received any written protest to the proposal, I'd like to ask her to provide those copies to the board at this time.
No written protest to the proposal have been received.
Thank you. Since members of the public have been invited to participate in the hearing by phone, I'd like to ask that any members of the public who would like to communicate or comment on this item, please do so now. Do we have anybody online or in the chambers?
We do not, President Pauley.
Seeing no speakers, I hereby declare the public hearing closed. This time, I'd like to adopt the following resolution, a resolution amending the rate and method of appointment portionment of special tax, increasing the amount of authorized bonded indebtedness to be incurred by the district, and amending the boundary map for CFD number 2018-80 Willow Springs and calling for election therein. At this time, I'll look for a motion and a second.
I'll move it.
Moved by Director Corona, second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
Yes. President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Very good. That passes 5-0. The resolution that we have just adopted amends the original rate and methods of apportionment, increases the amount of authorized bond indebtedness, and amends the boundary map for CFD number 2018-80 and calls for a special election within the CFD, which to be held at this time by the Secretary.
All ballots have been cast in connection with the election for CFD number 2018-80, Willow Springs, of Eastern Municipal Water District, and the election has now been closed. The results of said election, which includes the number of votes cast for and against Proposition A, B, and C, was unanimous in favor of all propositions.
Having heard the statement of the Secretary certifying the results of the voting of the propositions, I will entertain a motion to adopt the following resolution. Resolution certifying the results of the August 16, 2023 special election within CFD number 2018-80 Willow Springs of the Eastern Municipal Water District. I make a motion by Director Armstrong, second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We will now go on to the next item on our agenda this morning, which are executive reports, and we will start with our general manager, Mr. Mawad.
Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, I wanted to share with you that on August 3rd, EMWD hosted U.S. Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland, and it was really an incredible opportunity for us to have the Secretary join us for not only a briefing of everything we've done in partnership with the Bureau of Reclamation and Department of Interior, but also visit the site of the future pure water replenishment program that is partly funded by the Bureau of Reclamation through the bipartisan infrastructure law. It was an opportunity also to demonstrate to the Secretary and the Department of Interior the partnership and collaboration that we've undertaken for years and decades across this region. So we did have Congressman Takano join the Madam Secretary. In addition, we have representatives from the Saboba tribe, as well as Congressman Ruiz's office and the County of Riverside Board of Supervisors. We also had our partnering water agencies, including Lake Hemet, Municipal Water District, Rancho California Water District, Elsinore Valley, and Western. So it was a wonderful opportunity to share with the Secretary our investments and our long-term partnership with the Bureau on recycled water program and, again, the achievements that we've accomplished. We also had an opportunity to go out to the site where the project will be constructed. I did want to say this is the highest level U.S. official, U.S. government official that's ever visited EMWD. I'm just very incredibly proud of this organization and this board and, frankly, our team. And I wanted to just do a quick shout-out to our public government affairs staff who truly did an incredible job within a matter of days. As you know, some of these things come together very quickly, and we only have a few days to prepare, work with the advanced team from the Secretary's office. So I just want to acknowledge April Cody, Jolene Walsh, and the entire public government affairs team for truly putting on what is a premier event for the Secretary. And I also want to express my appreciation to President Pauly, Vice President Corona, and Director Slauson for being part of the event. Next on the agenda is I wanted to share with the board that yesterday I had the opportunity to join Director Armstrong at the Metropolitan Board meeting, and Chair Ortega has initiated a new practice of inviting member agencies, general managers to sit at the dais with the board members or at the executive committee and provide comments. And I took the opportunity to highlight our longstanding efforts in the region, and specifically our recycled water program that is nationally recognized, and everything we've done over the years, including our engagement with our customers and our stakeholders. We brought some figurines of our mascots, Savvy the Water Drop and Patrick the Poo, as demonstration again of our public outreach programs and engagement. It was a really good opportunity to share with the Metropolitan Board what we've done over the years, and frankly, our priority of making sure we can always accommodate growth. Not only we need to be reliable, resilient when it comes to water supply today, but we need to make those necessary investments long-term to make sure we continue to accommodate growth, given that we are the fastest-growing region in the entire state. Next, I wanted to share with the board that you have in front of you a draft copy of our inaugural Environmental, Social, and Governance Report. We've worked with our Public Governmental Affairs team to put this report together, and we're very proud of the product that is in front of you. We are the first in the state to publish such a report, and we feel it's an important part of advocating on behalf of our ratepayers and demonstrating to various stakeholders when we go back to Washington, D.C., when we go up to Sacramento, frankly, when we meet with our financial ratings agency, to demonstrate to them everything we've done when it comes to our social programs, including our environmental programs when it comes to recycled water, going paperless, our renewable energy initiative, and progress towards our clean fleet vehicles. On the customer engagement aspect and the social aspect, our assistance and affordability programs are the cornerstone of the social section of the report. And lastly, under the governor's section, we feature our sound financial planning, our legislative advocacy efforts, safety culture, and tribal partnerships, among other key governance areas. We're hoping you get a chance to provide feedback to our team over the next couple weeks. We will be back in front of the board on September 20th with a formal presentation of the report, but we definitely looking forward to your review and your feedback on the draft report. Under items of interest to the board, I wanted to make you aware that we're currently engaged in reviewing the proposed direct potable reuse regulations that have been circulated by the State Water Resource Control Board. We are working with our associations, including Water Reuse, as well as CMUA, to coordinate our comments on the proposed DPR regulations. We will be submitting our own comments unique to our perspective when it comes to what we see are important considerations to effectuating DPR regulations. There is a workshop that's scheduled for September 7th. I know Pakal will be participating in that, and then our comment letter will be submitted to the state on September 8th. And along those lines, we continue to engage on providing comments and feedback to the EPA on the proposed PFAS regulations. And more recently, on August 11th, we submitted a comment letter in regards to 7 additional PFAS precursors that are being proposed as part of the CERCLA hazardous substance categories. And we, again, reinforced our position of the polluter pays principle. And we, again, highlighted the fact that these proposed regulations would increase the financial burden on water and wastewater customers. So we will continue to engage on that front. There's a number of other regulations being advanced under PFAS, but as you know, we're very much engaged in that effort. And we'll be back with the board to provide a comprehensive briefing on PFAS with our legal counsel sometime in September, October timeframe. We should be ready for that comprehensive briefing. And finally, under items of interest to the board, I wanted to let you know that we are scheduling our State of the District event. And during the pandemic, we had a hiatus of that in-person event, but we are ready to resume that, and we will be holding that event on September 27th. From 7:30 in the morning till 9:30, including breakfast. So we look forward to having you join us for that event. We'll go over what our current successes have been, our accomplishments, but also give a preview of our priorities going forward for this entire region. So looking forward to holding the event later in September. With that concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Questions for Joe, Director Armstrong, and then Director Eckerd.
Go ahead, Director Eckerd.
Well, just a comment on the Department of Interior visit. I mean, I'm sorry I couldn't be there, but as you said, it was kind of short notice. to me, it's just a wonderful reflection on the district and the district's reputation that took decades to develop. And I'm just very proud to be part of that, you know, a relationship with the tribes and everything that embodies the district. So congratulations to everyone on that.
Thank you, Dr. Record.
I wanted to comment on Joe's participation yesterday at the Met board meeting. And first of all, I think he did a tremendous job representing Eastern and sharing about Eastern and also sharing about our partnership with Metropolitan and the importance of that and our goal to partner with them. And it's really interesting. when Joe's done speaking, it's just where I happen to sit, I can see a lot of the board members, and they kind of turn their head and are like, wow, he's really good. So I just want to compliment you, Joe. You definitely have a presence, and you do a fantastic job. And then the other thing that, that Joe did was, well, he set a record yesterday. This has only been going on for, you know, a number of months or so, but Joe is actually the first general manager. So you get to sit at the dais, you get to participate, you get to make comments, but you can't vote. But Joe's the first person that actually spoke up and added comments to the discussion that took place, and they were really good comments. And so just recognizing Joe as the first general manager to actually say something when they were there. So you did a great job.
Thank you, Dr. Armstrong. I appreciate the opportunity. And again, I look forward to supporting your role in engaging with Metropolitan. We have a lot of important issues ahead of us on a region-wide basis, and I think those conversations are at Met are going to be very important. So thank you for your support.
Director Schlossen.
Yeah, just one comment regarding the Secretary of Interior coming. I think we did a great job. I think you, Phil, the presenters all gave due respect to the Interior Secretary. So I commend everyone for that. But I went back, and she was very personable. I liked her, too. Went back, looked it up. She's on the line of succession for president. Should the president and others, you know, be taken out? So she's a, you know, it's a very important person, and it's, we showed her a lot of respect, and I'm glad we did.
It was a huge honor for this organization. I think it spoke volumes to our reputation, as Director Record mentioned. Frankly, to have the secretary decide to come and visit Eastern out of all the different agencies out there, I think it speaks to decades of investment in relationships with the Bureau of Reclamation Department of Interior, and frankly speaks to this board and this organization and what we've done. And I'm just extremely proud of where we are today, and frankly look forward to an incredibly bright future for this organization.
The only problem with that is now we got to find someone bigger than that to come. So, Joe, you have your work cut out for you on the next big federal executive to visit us. But great job for the whole team on that. Thank you so much. Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Nick?
Nothing today.
Good morning, President Pauley. Nothing from me either.
Matt?
Good morning, President Pauley. Just wanted to mention that over the last week we finished our 2023 Saboba recharge obligations, and we're now currently about 700 acre feet into pre-deliveries for 2024, so recharge continues to go well. Thank you.
So we are caught up, and we're now...
And now we're getting ahead, yep.
Ahead, okay.
We're working on the A, yep.
That is excellent, excellent news on that. So, all right, with that, we're going to go on to our consent calendar this morning. Do any board members want to pull an item for separate vote or have a question? If not, Director Record.
I'll move the consent calendar.
Moved by Director Record, second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. We will now move on to our action calendar, item A, which is to approve and authorize agreements between Eastern Municipal Water District and the County of Riverside for American Rescue Plan Act funding for projects in County Districts 5 and 1. Before we go on with this item, I want to announce that I do work for the County of Riverside, and I was not directly involved in any of this, but certainly was hearing about it. So I did take the opportunity to ask legal counsel if I should participate in this item, and I will turn it over to legal counsel.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, we did look at this upon your request, and under Government Code Section 1090, a public official is prevented from having a financial interest in any contract that the agency enters into. However, there are exceptions to that, and actually definitions of what's determined to be a non-interest under Section 1091.5. We've researched the issue, and it's our conclusion that you are free to vote on this item in that even though you are an employee of the county, you have a non-interest in this matter, and so you're free to vote on it. And I just also ensure, if we could, that this part of the discussion is included in the minutes, which is one of the statutory requirements.
Very good. Thank you so much. With that, we will get a staff report.
Good. Sorry.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. Matthew Bates, District's Director of Engineering Support Services, and today I'll be presenting two additional agreements for additional ARPA funding. We'll first cover a little background in ARPA, and then we'll go into the various projects that will be included in the two agreements. A little background on ARPA. So as part of the President's COVID relief program, in March of 2021, the President signed a bill to provide about $362 billion in federal funding, $65 billion of which would be provided directly to cities and counties for direct projects. And the County of Riverside received about $500 million in funding over two installments. There are very important deadlines to complete projects. The county must appropriate or obligate the funds by December of 2024, and then the money must be spent, the projects must spend the money by December of 2026. Through our continued collaboration with the county, we have received funding for seven projects totaling approximately $16 million to date. And the continued collaboration with the county's office, we have four additional projects and two agreements for today. First, starting off in District 1, Supervisor Jeffries' district, we have our Highway 74 project. This project really goes to demonstrate Supervisor Jeffries' continued commitment to improve the Highway 74 corridor. Not only do we have funding for our project, he also provided funding to Elsinore Valley for a Highway 74 project, as well as the county has enacted or established the Enhanced Infrastructure Funding District to provide additional funding for projects along the Highway 74 corridor. Our project is currently in the design or in the preliminary design stage and will extend sewer service to the county's planning area 6. The county will be contributing up to $5.8 million for our project, plus an additional 25% contingency should the project exceed the initial funding, totaling about $7.25 million. And this is our only project that has a contingency clause within the agreement. We are evaluating two potential alignment options. The Highway 74 alignment is our preferred. There is an alternate alignment along Ellis Avenue. The alternate alignment has been identified in the event that the potential Paris consolidation does not go through. We would have the Ellis option as a fallback. To identify the two projects, so our preferred alignment, again, will extend sewer along Highway 74 from roughly Navajo to West Ellis. And then, as shown in blue, with the potential Paris consolidation, there is some existing sewer within their boundary that is undersized, so the blue section will be a sewer upgrade that we would also perform in order to provide sewer to planning area 6. Again, if the consolidation does not go through, we do have a backup solution, which would be extending sewer out Ellis Avenue, as kind of shown in the red box there, out to Planning Area 6. This alignment would connect directly into Eastern System, and so, again, it would avoid the need for the collection system within the City of Paris system. At the August 2nd Board of Directors meeting, the board did approve an amendment to our Dura's contract for design services for this project. The total project at this point is estimated at roughly $9.1 million. Again, we're at the preliminary stages, so we're still refining those cost estimates. With the county's total contribution, including the 25% contingency, we are looking at about $7.25 million for a potential EMWD share of $1.85 million. Again, those numbers will be refined as the design progresses. And the County Board of Supervisors will consider this item at the August 29th board meeting. On to District 5. Supervisor Gutierrez has identified and is providing funding to three EMWD projects, our San Jacinto groundwater facility at roughly $3 million, Mission Canyon 1 pipeline at $255,000, and the Well 37 facility project at $1.5 million. And I have more details on each of these in the following slides. The San Jacinto groundwater treatment facility, shown in the lower left-hand corner, will take groundwater from the four wells shown here, well 201, 202, 203, and 205, at roughly 9,000 acre-feet a year. And then the project is estimated at $33 million. And again, the supervisor is providing $3 million in funding to this project. The Mission Canyon 1 pipeline, shown in red. The existing pipeline kind of goes through the side of the hill, and we are proposing to relocate the water line within the roadway. It's about a $1 million project, 830 linear feet, and the supervisor is providing $255,000 towards this project. The project design is complete, and we will be bidding this project towards the middle of next year, along with the Mission Canyon 2 booster station project, which is also kind of shown on the map where it says Gibble Road, and we also received funding from Supervisor Washington on that project in the amount of $1.44 million. The last project is the Well 37 facility and discharge project pipeline. This project is estimated at about $8.7 million and will be equipping an well that has been previously drilled. The project is currently under construction, and along with the San Jacinto groundwater treatment plant project, this project enhances our local supply availability to the region. This project also received $2.5 million in Department of Water Resource funding for a total of $4 million in grant funding towards this project at roughly 45% of the total project cost. So in summary, today's action includes four projects, two agreements totaling $12 million in additional ARPA funding. The county's the county has contributed to 11 projects in funding for the district, totaling $28 million, and that does account for the 25% contingency that I talked about. In total, we have 12 ARPA-funded projects. The city of Murrieta and the Los Alamos project is the 12th, at a total funding of $31 million to the district. With that, the staff is recommending that the board approve an item, approve and authorize the general manager to execute an ARPA agreement for the Highway 74 project in the amount of $5.8 million plus the additional 25% contingency, totaling $7.25 million, and then a second agreement for the District 5 projects that I had mentioned in the amount of $4,755,000. And with that, I'll turn it back to Joe.
Thank you, Matthew. I have the privilege this morning to introduce to you, and some of you are very familiar with, Juan Perez. Juan is the Chief Operating Officer of the County Riverside, and frankly, Juan is not only a partner to EMWD, but he's a friend of EMWD. And I just wanted to acknowledge the incredible working relationship we've had with the entire county, and specifically Juan. I'm not sure if you're aware, but on a quarterly basis, we have meetings with Juan and his entire team at the county. And during those meetings, we're not only talking about the potential for ARPA funding, but we're talking about what needs to occur to support our communities. Everything from when we were facing arrearages a couple years ago, to the drought conditions, to the communication to the public, to investment in underserved communities. So I just want to highlight that there's a great deal of coordination that goes on day-to-day with the county. And I owe a lot of gratitude to Juan Perez, who's just been an incredible partner with us. And with that, I was going to invite Juan to say a few words.
Absolutely. Mr. Perez, please.
Good morning, and thank you, President Pauly. Thank you, Joe. Very much appreciate those kind comments, and it's good to see all of your directors. And it is my pleasure to be here on behalf of the county to thank EMWD for your partnership. For us, as we were looking at how can we put these federal dollars to work to make transformational investments, and investments that would lead to strengthening our communities and the economy, and not just dealing with the recovery, but the resilience, so that if we ever get shocks to the system, hopefully we don't experience anything like we did in the last few years, but how can we make our communities and our economy more resilient to that? And one of the key areas was infrastructure, and that was a high priority for our board. And as with many things, we have no greater, no stronger partner than EMWD in delivery of infrastructure. We're proud to be working on these projects together, and I just want to extend my thanks to all of you. And on a personal note, for me, my association with Eastern goes back over three decades now, since I was a young pup at the city of Hemet over 30 years ago. And Eastern at the time was just down the street there on San Jacinto Street. And I can tell you, in all that time, the partnership has never been stronger or better. And we have just tremendous amount of respect for your staff and Joe and the work that they all do. So we're looking forward to delivering these projects together for the betterment of our communities. It's really, again, a pleasure and honor to be here. Thank you very much.
Could I ask you a question, then we'll the board? But on the Highway 74, the county projects that to 20 years from now, Highway 74 is going to look probably a little different than it does today. That's the county's vision, I understand.
Correct, and a lot different, if I may say, President Pauly. And this project is a key aspect of that. Certainly, we know how important infrastructure is to the future of our communities. And 74 is a great example that without the backbone water and sewer infrastructure, it just it really needs the investment that this project would bring to help see that to the future that is ahead for it. And it's one of several different efforts. The county is also working on a community plan to plan ahead for 74, as well as an enhanced infrastructure financing district. Doesn't quite roll off the tongue, but an EIFD to pledge a portion of our future property tax towards infrastructure growth. So very much so, and we think this is indeed a transformational project for that community.
Director Armstrong, do you have a question or a comment?
I just would like to say thank you for your partnership and support and with Eastern. And moreover, it's just great to have really good leadership in our county. And I love our county. It's wonderful. And to have someone so passionate and competent as you and care for our county. So I just thank you for that as well. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Director. Very much appreciate that.
Director Record?
And I echo those comments. Good to see you, Juan. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you, Director Record. Very much appreciate it. And thank you again. Look forward to a lot of groundbreakings and ribbon cuttings in our collective future. Thank you.
We are good at that at Eastern. So thank you again for being here. Any other questions for Mr. Bates on this issue or Joe? And if not, I'll look for a motion and a second on it.
I'll move the motion.
Motion by Director Corona, second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. Thank you again, Mr. Perez, for being here today. I appreciate it very much. We will go on to item B, which is to authorize advancement of the Local Resources Program Agreement with Metropolitan Water District for the French Valley Recycled Water Distribution Project and approve addendum to the 2010 Recycled Water Distribution Pipeline Expansion Project Environmental Assessment Environmental Impact Report. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. John Worth, Water Resources Planning Manager, and pleased to present this item to you. By way of background, the French Valley Distribution Project consists of just over 12,000 feet of 8 and 12-inch pipeline within the French Valley area, designed to expand our recycled water distribution system, primarily supporting retrofit projects through the Accelerated Retrofit Program. We submitted a LRP application to Metropolitan in October of last year. We received notification, authorization to move forward with construction pending finalization of that agreement. Concurrently, we had an application in with DWR for grant funding, and so we were holding off on finalizing the LRP agreement pending notification of that grant award. If we had received the award, then the LRP would not be the project would not be eligible for LRP. We did not receive that award, so we are now moving forward with the LRP agreement. So the LRP is administered by Metropolitan, funded by member agencies. It's designed to support projects that increase local supplies and offset the need of imported water from Metropolitan. We've had six LRP agreements, four of which were for recycled water and then two for our desalinization program. So this would be the seventh LRP agreement if approved. In 2014, Metropolitan made some pretty significant changes. They provide three different alternatives that we can choose from. The first two are sliding scale with a $340 per acre foot max incentive on the first one for 25 years and $475 max incentive for 15 years on the second one. And then the final is a fixed rate incentive for the life of the 25-year term. So the sliding scale calculation is basically taking a look at what the project costs are for EMWD and comparing that to what the Metropolitan LRP effective rate is. If our project costs are higher, then we get that delta up to the max incentive amount. Of significance to note here is that for the first two alternatives, you do the sliding scale calculation every year. For the fixed rate, you do that sliding scale calculation only during the negotiation, and those terms are then codified in the agreement for the life of the loan, or the life of the agreement. On the left side is just the performance requirements for all three alternatives. For this project, construction's already started. We are anticipating operation within the 4 years, so we will meet all of the performance requirements. On the right side is kind of a comparison of the different alternatives. Once again, sliding scale. Each year, the reconciliation is pretty extensive, and that LRP rate is subject to change over the life of the agreement, and we're seeing it only increase. So that would, on a sliding scale alternative, that would potentially result in lower contribution over the life of the agreement. So this is a look at the French Valley project and using current costs and projections for yield as well as O&M costs. And basically about $860,000 is what we're anticipating contribution over the life of the agreement for the fixed rate alternative. So staff is recommending that we move forward with alternative three. It avoids the risk of the LRP effective rate changing in the future. It minimizes the annual reconciliation administrative effort, and it'll be a stable long-term contribution to the recycled water program. The project was covered underneath a program EIR that the board certified in 2010. And we are also requesting an addendum to that EIR. It's administrative and fiscal in nature and is required as part of the LRP agreement. So with that, we are recommending to move forward and advance the LRP agreement for the French Valley Recycled Water Distribution Project and also adopt the 2010 distribution pipe, the addendum to the EIR. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Director Record has a question.
Great project. Move approval.
Second. Other questions? I just second it. We have a motion by Director Record, a second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
passes 5-0. Thank you for a great presentation. We'll move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize an amendment with Woodward and Curran for $99,000 for the water supply planning study update, additional appropriation of $71,000. Sir, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. So I'm going to go ahead and start my presentation just with a couple slides updating the progress on this study that's been happening since late 2021. And so beginning with some background, the roots of today of the study that we're talking about today actually go back to a 2011 integrated resources plan that we did. And at that point, there were, you know, kind of some emerging drivers. The adjudication on the east side was kind of just coming into play at that point in time. There were some concerns about, you know, how we would achieve our goal of putting 100% of our recycled water to beneficial use, and being in Southern California, drought shortages are always something that we were thinking about, and that was also the time when there was a lot of discussion about what shape the Delta Fix, as it was called at the time, what was going to look like. And so we did this integrated resources plan kind of as a follow-on to a similar document that Metropolitan did. And this plan, we came out with a number of recommendations, a lot of which you'll note, looking at this slide, have been either completed or are significantly underway. Just some things that, you know, we like to highlight include the Paris 2 desalter, which obviously we got going last year. And then, there was a recommendation, for example, for indirect potable reuse, and, you know, our purified water replenishment program is well underway. But there is one thing on this list that didn't quite happen, which was a third metropolitan plant in our service area that was going to kind of be, I believe, in that Winchester area between Mills and Skinner. And so when we realized that that wasn't going to happen, we had a number of follow-on studies that happened in the 2015-2016 period, and we really wanted to just go back and take a look at our analysis to take into consideration this change in Metropolitan's plans, but also to account for some of the successes from the 2011 plan. You know, one of the items that was recommended that we hadn't discussed yet was, you know, an investment in conservation and improving our water use efficiency, and we really started to see that come into play starting in the 2015-2016 time period, coinciding obviously with the first of two, you know, really bad droughts that hit our service area. And so what we did is, we kind of updated that analysis, accounting for the change in water use, as well as some of the changes in the infrastructure plans in our service area, and kind of updated those recommendations. And we integrated this analysis into our 2016 Water Facilities Master Plan. And so now, you know, we're 5, 6, 7 years after we did that analysis, we kind of felt like it was time to revisit this this type of study again. And some of the drivers this time, we're seeing a lot of variability in our projections for future supply and demand. You know, one example is our service area growth. You know, for the first couple years after the 2015 and 16 study, you know, it seemed like we'd kind of plateaued, and growth was occurring, but at a much slower rate. And then, obviously, as we've been hearing about quite a bit, both this board meeting and past board meetings, you know, growth has really taken off the last couple years, and so it's really fluctuated a lot. We had that slow period and then that fast period. There's also, as always, increasing regulatory type impacts. You know, I have on this slide the SB 606, AB 1668. That's the Making Conservation the California Way of Life legislation that is setting water use objectives for every water supplier in California, and that's going to be, requiring us to improve our water use efficiency, although we're, you know, on track for that and doing good. And then there's also, you know, just additional regulatory requirements that, you know, we've had to live with. The greenhouse gas emissions targets that, you know, we would have to start meeting in 2030, and then the basin water quality objectives that, you know, we've always had to be cognizant of. And then we also wanted to take a look at, what we're calling system reliability and resilience. You know, we did a number of what-if scenarios. Kind of, a couple years ago, we had that unplanned outage at Mills. And so, you know, we wanted to make sure that we were planning for events like that, and to make sure that we were going to be able to handle if an event like that happened in the future, that we were prepared to do that. And so these were kind of all things that we wanted to address in this updated study. And so at the end of 2021, we contracted with Woodard and Curran. It was a competitive process, and we got this study going. And so before I delved too much into the analysis, I just wanted to kind of set the stage and give some key context and discuss some related efforts that tie into this project. So you may be aware, Metropolitan has been working on an integrated resources plan update on their end. And so for our imported water assumptions, we looked at what Metropolitan is calling their scenario D. It's kind of the worst case scenario. You can see the diagram that Metropolitan uses in their material. You know, it's where there's high demand on Metropolitan and a reduced availability of imported water supplies. We are making a new assumption in terms of our internal EMWD demands. I'm not going to go too much into that right now. I have a slide coming up later where we'll discuss that. We do have a recycled water master plan that's kind of happening in parallel with this effort. And so we've been coordinating with John Wirth and his group on making sure that we're making them aware of, you know, the growth that we're projecting, and then, you know, as a result of that, the recycled water supply that would be available to them. And then, you know, they're working with us to make sure that we're aware of the demands that they're projecting and how that's going to grow. So we're working in parallel with them. And then the last effort I wanted to mention, I'm sure the board is aware of this, is, you know, we are doing that four-party study with the other agencies in Riverside County. And so what we did is we didn't specifically include those projects in this analysis, but what we're doing is we have this assumption that if those projects do get implemented, they would be able to offset our projected purchases of imported water. So with that, we can get into the fun stuff and start talking about numbers. So the first part of the analysis is, you know, we need to figure out what our projected demands are going to be. Obviously, that will drive the amount of supply that we need. And so, as I mentioned, we are making kind of a new assumption for our water demand factor. And so I just wanted to walk through that. So we have this graph here, and the first thing I want to look at is that the dotted line at the very top, that line represents 440 gallons per day per EDU. That is our current planning factor. And if you look at the blue bars, you know, this is our water use per EDU going back to 2012. And you can see that's a great planning factor up to about 2014. You know, gives us a little bit of buffer over what our actual water use is. But as I mentioned, our water use efficiency has been, you know, really improving, and our conservation team has been doing a great job. And so, you know, since 2015, when we started seeing the water use reductions in response to the drought at that point, you know, we've talked about this a lot. You know, our water use really hasn't rebounded, you know, even after that drought ended and we kind of entered a couple normal years, and then, you know, then we went into another drought. You know, we can see, you know, our water use has stayed, you know, consistently low since that period. And so, you know, what we felt like was, you know, for the purposes of this study and the analysis that we were doing, we weren't sure if that 440 number was really going to be an appropriate assumption. And so what we did is we looked at, you know, the last couple years of water use, you know, which covered, you know, some dry periods, but also some wet periods. And we kind of looked at what that water use was. And we went ahead and we put a 10% weather factor and a buffer on that. You know, that way that gives us a little bit of headroom in case things go sideways or, you know, things don't quite pan out the way that we think they're going to go. And so that ends up being a reduction of about 7% from that 440 number, brings us down to about 410 gallons per day per EDU. And I did want to note a couple things there. The first is that I mentioned the AB 1668 and SB 606 regulation. So really, this is going to be our minimum you know, water use efficiency. In reality, we actually expect to get even more efficient. And so that's a good, you know, even though it's a reduction, we still think that's a good conservative assumption. And then the other thing is, because, you know, we have seen this change in our water use, we are planning at some point to do a follow-on study where we're going to evaluate our water and our wastewater planning factors just to make sure that, you know, in our studies moving forward, we're using good assumptions. So that's the first piece. Then we have a second piece, which is, you know, the first piece being, you know, how much water are we going to use? And then the second piece being, well, how quickly are those demands going to grow? And so generally, when we look at growth in our service area over the long term, there's two kind of sources of data that we typically reference. The first being a 2018 study that was done by Empire Economics, looking specifically at our service area and kind of some of the economic conditions that would impact our growth. And then the second being a kind of a more macro view from SCAG that kind of just looks at this whole region. And taking a look at what's actually happened, our actual growth has actually exceeded both of those studies. So for our analysis here, what we did is, we figured out that the Empire Economics study was a little bit closer to reality in terms of what actually happened. So we started with that projection, and we looked at kind of the cumulative error since that study was completed, and we also took a look at the projects that are in active development in our database of proposed projects and kind of moved some of that growth from the later years to the earlier years to kind of reflect what's happening, you know, what we see happening today. That study goes out to about 2040. And so once we hit 2040, we kind of transitioned that growth rate back to the long-term projection that SCAG gave us, because that's kind of the best, you know, the best data that we have, again, with, some tweaks here and there based on the development that we're tracking. And then for our build-out year, we looked at all known development, not just what's in construction or planning and design that we're tracking in our DOP, along with our compiled land use data. So we compile data, for example, from various general plans, and you know, when we get planning notices, we compile all of that in a database. And so what we did is we kind of everything we know about based on zoning, what's, you know, being planned, we put all that together, and that's what we're saying is going to happen at build out. And as everybody's aware, we're also a wholesaler, and so what we did is we also pulled in the latest available data from our coordination with our sub-agencies when we did our last urban water management plan, and we also reviewed the contractual agreements and maximum demands that we have with the various agencies. And so when you put both of those pieces together, we kind of, this is one slide that kind of just shows just the potable retail side of that. So what we have here is on the left, we have a bar chart showing our projected demands by the five major areas in our service area in five-year increments going from 2025 through build-out. And then the right is a pie chart that's essentially comparing the last bar of that graph, our projected build-out demands, against what we're seeing today, our current conditions. And just a couple takeaways from this information is, first of all, we estimate that we're on the water side about 43% built out. So we talk about this a lot. We're a rapidly growing area, and there's a lot of area to grow. And in the near to medium term, the Paris Valley South area has the most projected growth, and it actually is anticipated to outpace the other four areas combined. And so that's indicated by the green bars as well as the green slices on the pie chart. So on the pie chart, the solid colors are what exists today, and then the hatched colors are the growth that we're expecting to see between now and build out. And so it's the Paris Valley South area isn't the biggest slice in terms of like the growth that's expected to happen, but it is what is projected to happen sooner. And then as we go closer to build out, we are expecting to see more growth as well in Paris Valley North, as well as in the San Jacinto Valley. And we see that in Temecula and Moreno Valley, that we're a lot closer to our ultimate condition there. So that is the kind of the demand side of things. With that figured out, then we started looking, we started doing our evaluation on the supply side. And so I wanted to start with this graph, which is kind of one of the first stages of our analysis. And so what we did here is we are comparing the projected max day demands in our service area against our existing infrastructure capacity. And so just walking through The graph here, we have the green line being the projected max day demands, again, in the five-year increments between 2025 all the way out through build-out. This dark blue bar portion of the bar is our current capacity that's available to meet max day demand. So you see, you know, even out to 2025, we're in good shape and we're able to meet those demands. The light blue portion of the bar is going to be the kind of the baseline condition, in that these are all the projects that, you know, we have underway. So this is the capacity that, you know, it doesn't exist today, but it will exist by the years that that are shown on this bar, and it's in progress. So then we have the gray bars, and that is really going to be the focus of this study, because what we're doing is we're looking at what else do we need to build and when do we need to build it. And so that's really the portion of our infrastructure that we're going to be tweaking in this study. And I just want to note, in this example, you know, starting in 2040, just trying to get ahead of the questions, you know, it does look like we have, you know, in this scenario, a lot more capacity than maybe we need. It's not because we're planning on going nuts because we want to have fun. Or you know, we have money burning a hole in our pockets. It's because we want, that's capacity that we're, putting into access supplies at Skinner, for a reliability type scenario. Again, I mentioned that we wanted to plan for, you know, what would happen if, for example, a Mills outage went out. So we just happened. So we just want to make sure that we have that ability to access that water. It doesn't mean we're going to buy all that water and just, like, put it in our back pocket somewhere. Although banking is a consideration. So then we kind of hit the stage of the study where we're kind of just throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks. And so we put together a number of initial water supply portfolios, and each time we tried to emphasize something a little bit different, whether it's heavier MET reliance or you know, developing more local supplies. And the goal of this is to basically evaluate all of their the performance of various paths we could go down to you know, see what does best under a number of criteria. And so we scored their performance based on reliability, so both in terms of water supply reliability and in terms of system reliability. Again, you know, hydrologic impacts, as well as if we had, you know, some sort of outage. We looked at their ability to meet those regulatory requirements. So, like, some of the scoring criteria looked at the GHG emissions, as well as basin water quality. I mentioned those being drivers earlier, as well as things like cost effectiveness and how challenging or not these projects would be to implement. And so I mentioned, you know, we had six alternatives. We do kind of just show, just for your reference, I know we don't really have a legend here, but just kind of how some of the different alternatives panned out in terms of scoring. The higher the bar, the better. And so kind of what we noticed is the portfolios that performed the best, you know, there were kind of a number of projects that there was commonality and were really driving their better performance. And so some of those included maximizing the usage of our Paris water filtration plant, as well as our conveyance that we're putting in from Skinner. That's the EM11 project, as well as things like purified water replenishment. You know, IPR was one of those themes that carried forward from all of those studies I mentioned at the beginning. And so, you know, making sure that we're continuing to do that, you know, put the potential of doing recharge in Lakeview to support our desalination project was another kind of example of something that was common between the high scoring alternatives. And so, you know, really there's this mix of investing in our local supplies as well as, you know, continuing to access the resources that are available to us from Metropolitan. And then, you know, another commonality is, you know, I mentioned, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty. And so we wanted to also look at, you know, things that would be available to us at build out in case things, you know, again, change, don't play out the way we anticipate. And so in the high scoring alternatives, you know, at build out in our back pocket, we do have additional capacity that would be available from Mills, as well as expansions at the Hemet plant that we could do. And so the other realization that we kind of came to as we put together these portfolios is we kind of realized, you know, for some of, there are some decisions that we can make today. But as I mentioned, there's also options that are kind of going to be dependent on information that we find out in the future. So, for example, I mentioned expansion of the Paris plant. Well, how far we can expand that depends on, you know, what we ultimately determine is going to be the yield of that brackish area on the west side, as well as whether or not we can do recharge. So there are things that we still need to study. And so rather than doing a discrete recommendation with just one path, what we ended up deciding to do was to put together what we're calling an implementation roadmap that's going to kind of just basically guide our development, our supply development moving into the future. So what we're showing in this slide is just an example of what a piece of what that might look like. So one question that came up is, do we prioritize the expansion of the Paris plant, or do we try to access more water from mills? And so that's that first decision node on the left there. And basically, based on discussion with our stakeholders and the modeling, we really felt like that was the decision we could make today, which is that we did want to prioritize the Paris plant. And so, we go down to that bottom branch, and then, that leads us to a number of additional decisions that, really are going to require more data and more information. And so what we did is we kind of put all of the different alternatives and the options into kind of this roadmap concept. And so there are some decisions, like I said, that we can make today. And so what we found in our modeling is that, things like maximizing EM11, which I mentioned earlier, maximizing PWR, doing the ERRP in San Jacinto, those are all things that we look at it today, and there's basically, in all the scenarios, it makes sense. And then, there are some things that we're going to, need to make that decision in the future. Things like how far do we take the Paris North program, or whether or not we're able to do a recharge on the west side in Lakeview, or can we do some sort of indirect potable reuse out there, or does it make more sense to do a surface water augmentation type project? So there's going to be things that we know we're going to need to revisit in the future, and that's really the goal of this roadmap. But obviously, it's important for us to make sure that no matter which branch of the roadmap we take, that there's a path to being whole, that we're never running out of water. And so we do make sure that each path through this implementation roadmap, that we ends up in a place where we can meet all of our demands. And so I just wanted to show an example outcome of just going through just one branch of that decision tree. This is kind of showing how our water supplies change from 2025 through build out. And so you can see in this example, we're going from, kind of the water supply portfolio that's, what we're doing today. And by build out, we're actually expanding our local supplies a little bit, both between our potable local supplies as well as our recycled water supply. And the bar chart on the bottom shows that, not only are we able to meet the supplies on an average annual basis, but that we have the capacity available on a max day basis as well. So we do make sure that there's a viable path through that decision tree, no matter how we go. So, like I said, this is kind of an update on where we're at. So I did want to review some of the key takeaways that we're seeing. This is kind of going to be a running theme, but we've really determined that this Paris Valley South area is going to be, really critical moving forward. We're seeing a lot of growth out there, and there's not a lot of supply that comes into our system in this region, which is shown in that map on the right there. We have our desalters there, so that does provide, kind of a supply that's already within the region. But aside from the desalters, all of that growth is going to have to be met with supply that we bring in either from the north, or, from the south, from Skinner, or potentially from the east. That is an option depending on how things go with getting our storage agreement updated with the Water Master. And so, one big key takeaway that I'm kind of working up to is, we really need to monitor the growth out there and make sure that, our infrastructure development is keeping pace with the development that's happening out there. And so kind of some recommendations include prioritizing the expansion of the Paris plant to 28 MGD. This lets us bring water from the north south into this region, and it does give us a bit of a cushion in case there's any delays with EM11. Or, you know, kind of before I move on too far, you know, if the growth slows down, then, you know, the timeline for this becomes a little bit less critical. So that's why we want to make sure we keep monitoring this. Going back to the order of the points here, EM11 does become, you know, an important piece of this puzzle. Not only does it give us more supply in Paris Valley South, but it improves our reliability, not just here, but elsewhere in our service area in an outage scenario. And then kind of the last piece is, you know, we really want to make sure that we're determining what is possible in terms of the desalter expansions. You know, that's one of those big decisions that we know is going to be an important decision node in the future, but we don't have all the information that we need right now. And so really just making sure that we're studying the capacity of that basin, how much more brackish groundwater can we pump, and, you know, if in addition to that, you know, is there the ability to recharge, you know, recycled water, that sort of thing. And there's some feasibility studies that I believe are already underway to address that. So in terms of where we are today, we are requesting an amendment today just to take us to the finish line for this project. The work that's remaining, you know, we've kind of looked at kind of our most likely demand scenario moving forward, but we did want to make sure that we take another pass through and look at a high and a low growth type scenario and just make sure that all of the project phasing recommendations stay valid. And we'll finalize all of that and get some final recommendations, which we'll put into a report. And then one of the things that Woodard and Curran did for us is they are developing, or have developed, really, a decision tool, a decision support model to kind of help us evaluate scenarios. And so there will be some training when they hand that off to us so we can run some additional scenarios moving forward. So with that, that brings me to my recommendation, which is to approve and authorize that amendment with Woodard and Curran. That would be for about $99,000, an additional appropriation of about $71,000. We had some contingency funds in our project budget that we would apply to this amendment, which is why the amounts don't match up. And so with that, be happy to take your questions.
All right, questions on this? I had one. First of all, I just want to, your enthusiasm of board reports is off the scale. So thank you for that. I appreciate that very much. The one question I had in looking at all this, things that may come our way, for example, I'll just use, if somehow we can reach an agreement with the Doheny project, for example, mm-hmm. and that adds to our water supply, do we factor that into that, or is that so far down the road and off the grid that it's not part of the decision-making currently?
It's not explicitly considered in this project, but the kind of the underlying thing that we're going to write into the report is that if those projects come to fruition, we are going to offset imported water supplies.
Okay.
That's a great question, President Pauly. So Doheny, as you know, we're pursuing that potential partnership. We have also other alternatives we're looking at, including the Southwest Riverside County Alliance that we have formed. So all of those programs are really key because we recognize that as we continue to grow, we are always going to rely partly on imported water supplies. So whatever we can invest, whether it's Doheny or any other kind of programs, will help offset that reliance. I just want to say, you know, Gordon did a great job, but really what we wanted to share with you is that we're constantly looking at these important issues. This is really part of our long-term strategic water supply plans, and we're always balancing our needs as well as the local, as well as regional, frankly, statewide dynamic that's continuously evolving. So we have to consider all those issues, and we bring them together, and Gordon and the entire water resource team is always looking at making sure that ultimately what we bring forward to this board in terms of recommendations for investments in capital infrastructure is balanced and is a no-regret recommendation, essentially, or no-regret project. So that I know there was a lot of material to go through this morning, but I just wanted to impress on you that there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that culminates in our recommendation in our capital improvement program.
No, absolutely. I mean, I truly appreciate the work that Gordon does on this, and great presentation. Director Armstrong.
Could you go, I think it's slide 17 that shows the mix. Oh, no, not 17. Maybe, yeah.
Yep.
16 shows that mix of our supplies from current to build out. Build out is essentially, I mean, more than doubling our current demands. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to double, and yet the percentages in the supply are going to kind of improve in terms of the local resources compared to our met, which is, I feel like, you know, to Doheny and other projects, I feel like the easy stuff for local supply is probably already done. So to get there and double your local supplies, you know, it's going to take an effort, and exploring all those alternatives it's going to be the solution, finding some of them that do work. But that seems like a pretty big task ahead to do that.
No, absolutely. And you're absolutely right, Director Armstrong. We do have a strategic objective of always maintaining that balance between imported and local supplies. And that balance is about 50%. Yeah. But I will tell you that we still, as Gordon mentioned, we still have a number of opportunities locally. You know, our desalination program, we're already starting on looking at expansion of our capacity. North Paris groundwater, we're in the midst of construction, but we feel that's an anchor project, meaning there's going to be additional wells that we can drill around that area to complement the program. Purified water replenishment, we're going to be breaking ground on the first phase. There's multiple phases. So I feel that there's still significant opportunity to expand current and possibly future programs locally, but it also means we got to look elsewhere. So I'm very much of the mindset, we all are, that we're not going to leave anything off the table. We're going to continue looking at every opportunity. And ultimately, that brings resilience to our region, because as we all know, when we go through multiple years of drought, local resources become so much more critical to our region. So we will do all of the above, and we do appreciate your support.
Director Record, anything on this?
No, I appreciate your work, Gordon. It's been fun watching you over the years, and this is really good information that every agency should have, and I doubt that a lot of agencies have it to this degree of you know, of everything that's involved. So I'll make a motion if we're ready for that.
I think we are. We have a second. Director Corona would like to second that. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Thank you.
5-0. Thank you very much. Let's take about a 7 to 10 minute break. You tell me when, sir. Now? All right. We will reconvene, and we will go on to item number 7 on our agenda today, which is our informational items. And we have Metropolitan's Climate Adaptation Master Plan for Water. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly. Yes, please try to say that 3 times quickly.
I could not.
Strong and General Manager Joe Mawad have both referenced the Climate Adaptation Master Plan for Water that Metropolitan is currently advancing. And this information item this morning is really to provide the full board with an overview of the process, some background on the process, and hopefully facilitate some feedback and for you to share your perspective with Director Armstrong and the rest of staff as we continue to participate in the process. We're also going to share with you EMWD's priorities as we've defined them as we navigate this process. But again, we hope to have a conversation and hear your thoughts on this process as well. So I'll start out with a little bit of background on the process and then an overview, which includes really 3 major components. The Integrated Resources Plan, which was started a few years ago, the Climate Adaptation Master Plan for Water, or what's being referred to as CAMP, for W, or CAMP for Water, and also I'll touch a little bit on the long-range financial plan, which I'm sure you're going to hear a lot more about from John Adams and his team in the future. Also, EMWD's participation to date and our priorities, as well as MET's public engagement strategy, and then the next steps in the schedule for the process. Earlier this year, both Director Armstrong and Joe participated in a two-day board retreat, and that retreat really highlighted a few things. The need for the agencies to have a deeper understanding of each other and each other's needs, the historic crossroads that the metropolitan service area is facing, and then the potential impacts in the future from climate change. And that really facilitated the need for, or the development of this approach for what's being referred to as a climate adaptation master plan. And there was a document that was prepared that really outlined the approach, which highlighted key areas, including reliability, resiliency, financial sustainability, affordability, and equity. The Camp for Water is really part of the overall integrated planning process that started with the IRP Phase 1 needs assessment. And that needs assessment was completed in April of 2022. And I'll talk a little bit more about the results of that here in a moment. Those findings from the needs assessment are now being combined with a long-range financial plan needs assessment that'll feed into Phase 2 of the process, which is the One Water implementation. So this Camp for Water, coupled with the long-range financial plan, is really culminating from the needs assessment that was completed earlier last year. So as I mentioned, the needs assessment was Phase 1 of the 2020 Integrated Resources Plan that was initiated in 2020 and was adopted by the Metropolitan Board in April of 2022. That process was a collaborative process. It included input from the member agencies as well as the Metropolitan Board, and it was based on a scenario planning approach. Gordon showed you the slide with the four scenarios. You're going to see that again today. But in essence, it looked at a variety of plausible futures that weren't just based on hydrologic conditions. It also evaluated or considered economic growth in the area, regulatory requirements, the potential for a rebound effect for water use. So there were a lot of things above and beyond just hydrologic conditions, which had always been the basis for Metropolitan's integrated planning in the past. So as I mentioned, you were going to see these four boxes again. So Metropolitan looked at four main scenarios, and it started with the best case scenario, which was a low demand or low growth scenario coupled with stable imports. And then the worst case scenario that Gordon mentioned, scenario D, which was a high demand, a reduced import scenario. And that high demand meaning it could be a rebound in water demands post-drought, rapid economic growth, and the reduced imports that could be a result of climate change, could be a result of regulatory conditions. So again, all of these plausible conditions that led into these scenarios and being evaluated. And obviously, those developed bookends, A and D, with two scenarios kind of in the middle, had different outcomes in terms of new supply needs as well as new storage needs. And so that range, starting with the best case scenario, scenario A, which again was a low demand, stable import scenario, it was determined that if that was the future, there would be no new supply needed. That MET's current plan and what they are currently implementing would be adequate for a scenario A future. Worst case scenario, scenario D, resulted in the highest amount of what they refer to as core supply development, all the way up to 650,000 acre feet, with C and D being in the middle. So that range, depending on those plausible futures, was 50 to 650,000 acre feet. What they also determined, though, is by doing a combination of storage and new supply, they could reduce the amount of new core supply that was needed. And so they looked at these different combinations of storage and supply. And you can see on the table on the bottom, this gives an example for scenario D of the assumption starting with if you did not establish or develop any new storage, the new core supply that would be needed to meet the demands in scenario D, again, that worst case scenario, was 650,000 acre feet. Mid-range, you go to about 250 1,000 acre feet of new storage, you can reduce that new supply needed down to 550. And then what was really interesting is that they found through these model runs that they got really a small incremental improvement going from 250,000 acre feet of storage to 500 with only about a 50,000 acre foot reduction in new supply. So again, it really allowed them to refine and hone in on an optimal balance to meet that scenario D condition. So at the end of that needs assessment, there was the next phase, which was the implementation, which has now become, again, this combination of the Climate Adaptation Master Plan as well as the Long Range Financial Plan. And the goal is to answer these key questions. What's the problem? The problem is that the needs assessment identified a range of supply development gaps. How do you solve it? As highlighted, there's different combinations of core supply development as well as storage development. What does it cost? So analyzing the cost of the options in the portfolio and how do you pay for it? Analyzing the rate impacts under different business models. And Director Record, I remember you often, I think in almost every special committee meeting, asking about the cost when we were talking about the IRP, and we're finally getting there. This gives a graphical overview of the process. It started with, as I mentioned, defining the problem, starting to develop a structure for how this next phase is going to be advanced. There have been a series of workshops already which have really focused on developing the themes and trying to get a broader understanding of different member agencies' perspectives and how those themes are going to be utilized to evaluate the different portfolios. And as Director Armstrong mentioned and Joe confirmed, throughout these processes, not only at the board meetings themselves, but at the committee workshops, there have been panels of member agencies that have been invited to share their perspectives to try to improve that process. Throughout this entire process, there's also a continued public engagement, which I'll talk a little bit more about that strategy at the end. So the Camp for Water themes are really based on the discussions between the MET member agencies as well as the board regarding what concepts should be considered to close this gap. The intent is for these themes to be developed and inform the decision-making process. And they are really grouped into six categories. There's the general or the overarching themes that span all the categories. Reliability, which is defined as the ability to always meet water demands. Resilience, the ability to withstand and recover from disruptions. Financial sustainability, revenue sufficient to cover expenses over the short and long term. Affordability, relative cost burden, and elastic ability to access or pay for service and support member agencies' efforts to provide affordable supply to their customers. And equity, fair, just, and inclusive. So as I mentioned, these themes are going to be defined to help inform the evaluation and the selection of different portfolios. So as a potential alternative is identified to solve a supply gap, it is going to be evaluated based on these themes. So for example, does the project increase redundancy? And it'd be scored proportionately as the area of the service area that is benefiting from the project. Another example, does the project protect against multiple hazards? So how well does the portfolio perform under different types of disaster scenarios? I mentioned the long-range financial plan. This is actually hot off the press. This was, I think, released very late last week, and it was reviewed yesterday at the Finance Audit Insurance and Real Property Committee. It was a very detailed report, 140 pages-ish, and was discussed at length at this committee meeting yesterday. And it, really, the idea of this, again, is that this is a portion of the overall integrated resources planning process. So you have the technical side that's identifying the potential suite of portfolio projects, and then you have the financial answering that question of how are we going to pay for it. And I think that the main thing that I wanted to highlight from here is that, again, just like the technical review of alternatives for solving the supply gap, they're also going to be looking at different financial alternatives to solve the how do we pay for it question. And again, this is also meant to help inform the board in making those decisions as to what suite of projects to advance. And some of the key objectives of the plan are to look at phased project financing, the cost recovery method, as well as reserve requirements. At the conclusion of their needs assessment that they, again, performed on the financial side, and I'm sure John Adams will have more to share on this in the future. Again, this was pretty hot off the press. I added this in last minute yesterday in preparation for this, is that developing the core supplies and storage to meet those reliability criteria in Scenario D will result in higher rate increases than what was planned for in the 2022, 2023, and 2023-2024 10-year forecast. And if I'm recalling correctly, it was around that 5 to 6% estimated. And depending on how you structure the financial plan for Scenario D, it could be up to, I think, 10%. So it was a pretty big difference. Now, given there's different options that they could implement, but depending on how they structure that, it was a pretty, it could be a pretty big impact to rate increases. However, under development of water supply resources could also have a financial impact, and that was highlighted. The other thing that was really interesting about this evaluation was kind of the anecdotal comparison of the cost of conservation versus capital project investments. And that was something I don't know, I've never seen presented in that light. Again, a very, very interesting presentation, again, of, you know, kind of the impacts that could occur of not doing anything, impacts of just relying on conservation or the cost of that, and then, you know, hopefully somewhere in the middle is where we'll land, which increases reliability in a way that is most financially prudent. So EMWD has been participating in multiple levels, again, starting with Director Armstrong and Joe's participation in the board retreat earlier this year. There have also been multiple follow-up meetings at the MET member agency managers meetings, special committee and workshops that have happened at the board level, as well as a variety of questionnaires and other opportunities to provide feedback as we continue to engage in this process. We've also been kind of navigating this under the umbrella of key priorities for EMWD that, again, you know, obviously any ideas or suggestions or opinions you have on these would be greatly appreciated. So starting with supporting the actions that foster cohesiveness and continuity of Metropolitan as a collective, as well as actions that maintain Metropolitan's relevance. Also leaning on Metropolitan's mission. The mission is to provide its service area with adequate and reliable supplies of high-quality water to meet present and future needs in an environmentally and economically responsible way. Metropolitan's commitment to provide present and future should be prominent in each of Metropolitan's action and decision. And the future highlighter bolded here has been really important, and that has been a message that both Joe and Director Armstrong have carried successfully. When we first started this process, there was not a lot of reference or acknowledgement of future growth as we kicked off the CAMP process. And I noted in one of the most recent meetings, it's front and center now. It's right there up in one of the top priorities for the CAMP process. So great job by Director Armstrong and Joe for continuing to carry that message. And evaluating policies, policy principles, and Metropolitan's guiding document in adherence to these fundamental documents, or take deliberate action to update and change them as needed. And then continuing on, again, with our priority points, encourage choices that promote overall water affordability, maximizing the use of least expensive water supplies, maintaining a strong credit rating, aggressively pursuing external funding, maximizing revenue that is collected on property taxes. And also one of our messages is that, you know, EMWD as an early member of Metropolitan and supporting the growth of LA and San Diego and others, we want to make sure that that Metropolitan continues to be there now for EMWD as we are embarking on our growth. And as I mentioned, there is a public engagement strategy. It's a four-pronged collaborative approach that really incorporates some of the results of a regional study that Metropolitan conducted. Which, interesting, a key finding was that residents in Southern California are very concerned about water issues, including supply, water, and the impact of climate change. And they've conducted their first environmental listening session that included over 60 environmental partners and leaders, including indigenous tribal nation. So again, this is a part of their process to not just include feedback from the MET member agencies, but hopefully garner support from the entire community as they move forward with this process. In terms of next steps, Metropolitan, again, this is kind of a fast-moving process. Yesterday, they released three technical memorandum to document both the process as well as feedback they've received. And those three memos include the process, the themes, and the key terminology, as well as the background related to the needs assessment. They'll also be working to determine what level of resource development the board wants to pursue, considering these major themes, resiliency, reliability, financial sustainability, affordability, and equity objectives, evaluate the rate impacts, as I mentioned. And then also, interestingly, that they specifically highlighted to review the business model options through the lens of Pure Water Southern California. So that's obviously a major part of Metropolitan's portfolio moving forward and making sure that that's adequately reflected in all of the business plan models moving forward. I believe that there is a workshop next week. I haven't seen the confirmation of that, but then there's also multiple meetings coming up in September and October. This last slide just provides you an overview of the schedule in the different categories. You've got the themes that are being developed and how they'll be used, the various milestones shown there in the yellow bar, the various interactions with the board, the member agencies, that type of interaction all has a legend there at the bottom through questionnaires, committee meetings, MET member agency meetings, and then the community engagement. They hope to have the majority of the work done, I think, by early next year, but obviously it'll be an interactive and an adaptive process that will likely continue for years to come, quite frankly. And with that, Jolene's also online. She's been a major part of this, and she's also available to answer any questions, and obviously Joe is as well. And with that, happy to take any questions.
All right, I'm sure we have questions. Director Record, do you have any, or
do you want to comment first?
Yeah, I'll make a couple comments. This has, I think, really risen to a top priority at Metropolitan, and almost everything that you talk about, the answer is, well, that belongs in this whole camp process and should be solved as part of that. So it's very big. I think initially the effort began, and it was really looking for a lot of direction from the board and really involve the board on defining terms. I think it kind of just stalled a little bit because it was just too much for board to kind of, I'm not sure everybody understood what they were even trying to do initially. And it has sort of moved a little bit more now back to where staff is now putting information together and bringing it forward for the board to consider. And so I think it's moving, starting to get some momentum and move forward. To our whatever slide you had on what we were trying to emphasize, the mission statement, the focus on the future as well. I think initially these are really important for us in this initial process where they're defining things because there's a number of member agencies that I don't feel that they feel like they really need to rely on Metropolitan any further in the future. They're good. But we still do. We still need half of our future supply coming from Metropolitan, and we need our existing supply. And so Joe did a great job when he attended one of the workshops, and he really emphasized that, hey, when L.A. was growing, we were here. When San Diego was growing, we were here. When Orange County was growing, we were here. And now we're growing, and we need everybody to be there still for us, too. So I think the efforts to talk about growth and talk about grounding things back into our mission is really important to, in the initial stages, to kind of help ground the conversation and make sure that our priorities are represented too. And so it's been again, it's just been a two-step forward, one-step back kind of process. But and then integrating it with the long-range financial plan, and these things are all integrated. It's like an Excel spreadsheet with a circular reference. You know, you just it just goes around and around and around, and it's a difficult process. And I mean, I think the staff is really qualified and competent, and I think we should rely on the staff to bring more things forward to the board to look at. But the growth and the mission are things that we have focused on, and I think we would like to know from the rest of the board if you have any input and suggestions on what else we need to focus on to advocate for our priorities. Thanks.
Director Record?
So I'm glad you're there, Jeff, and you're able to participate, and, you know, with your financial background, that's really important too. And appreciate that you wanted slide 16 up there, because I was going to ask to have it put up too. And the first bullet point, I agree with completely. That's the essence of Metropolitan. And so I get concerned when I see current leadership, which seems to be looking out for the one agency that over the last decade or more has consistently said, we want to get off of Metropolitan. So that's a concern. So anyway, this is really important, and I'm glad you're doing it, and I'm glad you're there. So,
other comments?
I have no comments.
My only was, you know, echoing Director Record, and what Joe said is, yes, we're now the people that are growing, and I want to, and we were there for everybody else that grew. So I want to make sure that we are taken into account with our growth out here. So.
No, we appreciate the feedback, President Pauly, and the rest of the board. I will let you know that we will be back in front of the board as this process advances. This is, Linnea and Dr. Armstrong shared, this is going to be quite the process over the next year. I think one of the main key conversations that will occur going forward, I think Director Record alluded to it, is the financial plan. How does Metropolitan pay for this? And yesterday was a really good discussion at committee. There's a great deal of options. We're going to continue to emphasize the collective, that this needs to be an investment for the entire Southern California region, that this should not be a opt-in, opt-out approach. That's our priority, is whatever investments ultimately are decided at Metropolitan, everyone will benefit from that additional reliability and from that additional resiliency. So I think as we dive into the financial plan, there's going to be more conversations, and we'll be back in front of this board for input and feedback. Thank you.
All right, very good. Thank you. Great presentation. We'll move on now to item 8 on our agenda this morning, which is to receive and file various reports. I will make a motion to do so. Director Corona would like to second that. Make it a roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We will move on to our calendar review.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I have two events for your consideration, starting with the Water Leaders Academy that will be held on Thursday, September 7th, here in the EMWD boardroom. And the next event is the Aqua Fall Conference and Expo at Indian Wells, which will be held Tuesday, November 28th through Thursday, November 30th, if anyone is interested in attending. Moving on to page 2 is the board's master calendar. When you have a moment, please take a look and let us know if there are any updates or reschedules that you would like to add to your calendar. Moving on to page 4, we have our future board events to go over. The first one is the Marina Valley State of the City, which will be tomorrow. In Marina Valley. On Wednesday, August 23rd through Friday, August 25th, is the Urban Water Institute Annual Conference in San Diego. And the Science Under the Stars event will be held on Saturday, September 9th in Hemet. If anyone would like to attend, please let us know. The board meetings are on schedule for the next 3 months, as well as the committee meetings. The joint interagency meetings are also listed and are also on schedule. The out-of-office schedule is listed on page 5, and the district upcoming holiday schedule, which is the Labor Day holiday on Monday, September 4th, the EMWD offices will be closed. And I did want to mention that the Aqua Fall Conference flyer is attached, as well as the preliminary agenda. So if there's anything that you would want to attend, please let us know and we'll get you signed up. Other than that, if you have no questions or anything else that you'd like to add, I...
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will move on to director's attendance reports. We'll start with Director Armstrong.
Attended Metropolitan's Ad Hoc Annexation Policy Committee. That's essentially an ad hoc committee that was formed out of questions related to the de-annexation of Rainbow and Fallbrook from the Water Authority, and really who has jurisdiction over making decisions on that. So there's a discussion looking forward, not necessarily related to Rainbow and Fallbrook, but looking forward, should be Met's position on, in particular, when member agencies don't agree. And so just had an initial meeting, no real substance from that yet, and there's future ad hoc meetings coming. The board meeting, I wanted to point out one thing at the board meeting was the cyclic storage program was a few modifications to that were approved that I think enhances the program, and we support it very much, and so that was a good outcome there. Quail Valley Septic to Sewer Project community meeting, we had our second community meeting, wasn't as well attended as the first one, as you would expect, but still pretty well attended, and our staff did a great job in explaining the need for getting these access agreements, and I know we're making progress on that, and so I think that was really worthwhile, and team did a great job. Of course, had a good update with our general manager, and then our meeting, interagency meeting with Elsinore Valley, talked about Met issues, supply conditions, the camp process, and we just talked about some matters of mutual interest, Doheny, DeSalle, Quail Valley, and Met's apprenticeship program as well that we participate in and might be something for others to consider participating in as well. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Director Corona.
Okay. I attended the Department of Interior event that we had here. Was a fabulous event. Murrieta Temecula Group had a lady with the Department of Transportation, talked about the future realignment of Highway 79 in the Winchester area. Character Excellence Award, that was really great, and we had two of the 10 award winners were Eastern employees, so that was good. And Jeff covered Elsinore Valley and the Temecula State of the City address. So that was actually a very good event. It was probably the best one I'd been to. It a lot less backslapping and a lot more information on the city of Temecula. The mayor did a really good job. And, of course, Eastern was there and got a little Patrick the Pooh, you know, we're handing out. So that's my report.
Very good. I, again, as we said, the Secretary of Interior being here was fabulous for the district. And I know Joe always likes to improve, so I look forward to the Speaker of the House or the Vice President being here next.
We are planning a Washington, D.C. trip, so I'm going to rely on President Pauly and Vice President Corona to pull the strings on that.
All right. But anyway, that again, it's been said that it was an honor that a cabinet secretary of all the places she could have gone in Southern California to see projects that are environmentally friendly, that's increased water supply, they chose Eastern, and that is just incredible. So – Jamil Dada Character of Excellence Awards, as we noted, we had two people from Eastern that got awards at night. WRCOG, a presentation on some local energy, future energy projects. I did attend an update with the city of Marietta with Congressman Issa. We discussed the keyhole project and bringing that into Matton. The city of Marietta was very grateful to Eastern and said so in front of the congressman, who we already have a great working relationship with, but it was nice to hear from others. Had a good meeting with the general manager. The Winchester Mac, Alma did a nice job on letting people know about our, you know, with school starting, our filling stations, and to, you know, really work on getting kids a bottle to take and using those instead of the plastic bottles. BIA Water Conference, myself, the general manager, and a few other Eastern employees attended that. It was some good speakers throughout the day. And I was not able to attend the IE Works officers meeting on the 14th. So, director record.
A meeting with the general manager, always good. Always good to be up to date on things and have a good discussion.
Okay. And then Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended a briefing with the Secretary of Interior. That was, I already discussed that. And attended the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce breakfast. And there were presentations by the city, updates, and by RCC. And I sent some updates, provided some updates from EMWD that that Consuelo gave me, giving her credit.
Very, very good. Move on to director's comments or future agenda items. Director Armstrong, do you have one?
I have a comment only. No, I've been noticing, I talked to April earlier about one instance of, I would call it water waste, and I just have been noticing as I'm around the communities that I drive in, just like an increase in it that you see, so many sprinklers, you know, overwatering and just spilling into the streets and flooding the gutters and things just shooting up in the air. It just seems like there's so much of it right now. And I just would I don't know what we can do to message, to encourage, you know, still being mindful and less waste, or if our employees notice these things as they're driving around, they probably do, and they probably we say something. But it just seems like there's been an uptick in it. And I think now's the time to reinforce that message that you still need to be not wasting water. So
no, we agree, Dr. Armstrong. So let us go back and see what we can do to enhance awareness. And as you know, we do have an app that we have available to our employees to capture any type of water waste that is occurring, and that way we can address it with the property owner. But let us go back and see what we can do to continue to enhance awareness among the public. Absolutely.
Any other comments? With that, I know we have a need for closed session. Is that correct, Mr. Counsel?
Yes, Mr. Chair, pursuant to Government Code Section 549.56.9.
Very good. And I would like to note, when we do adjourn today, I'd like to adjourn this meeting in memory of Director Armstrong's father. So with that, why don't we take a moment to switch over to closed session?
Maybe I was...
Okay. We are back in open session. Can I have legal counsel report out of closed session for us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met in closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 549.56.9 to discuss one item of potential litigation. A discussion was had by the board, and instruction was given to staff. No formal action was taken by the board. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. And with that, we stand adjourned until September 6, 2020.
President Pauly, you were going to adjourn the meeting?
I thought we had... We mentioned that, but we will adjourn the meeting.
In memory.
You already did that.
Correct.
Oh, you did that. I'm sorry. I apologize.
We did. So thank you for that, and we'll stand adjourned until September 6th.
Thank you, President Pauly.